Many years ago, Riley Knight completed a degree in history. This proved to be a bad move, as it was absolutely useless for him. Until now, here's some half-assed history.
What's going on, mate? Great to be along for some more half-assed history. This week on the agenda, going to be having a chat about the affair of the diamond necklace. I don't know if you heard this story before. It's an absolute crack, I'll tell you that much. It was a scandal in the lead-up to the French Revolution. It's an often overlooked piece of history, but a very interesting story. Almost plays out like a piece of theatre. It's a very, very dramatic little tale here. But it did have an important effect in the lead-up to this revolution, as I say, because it damaged the already pretty blasted reputation of Marie Antoinette. Marie Antoinette, you may have heard of her. She's mainly famous for having never said, "Let them eat cake." Anyway, for this story, we're going back to the 1770s, when Louis XV is in charge of the Kingdom of France. Now, some historians reckon that this bloke was rather easily persuaded by his female companions, shall we put it that way. He was led around by the end of his, you get the picture. Anyway, he is essentially going around hiring and firing ministers based on whether his mistress at the time liked them or not and that sort of thing. And it's got out. People know that this was what he's about. Anyway, he is dead set on this chick, Madame Du Barry, right? He's that keen for a bit of Netflix and chill with this woman that what he does is he commissions this stupidly expensive diamond necklace for her in 1772. He gets this duo of Parisian jewelers named Bermer and Bassange to make this stupid necklace, this ridiculous necklace, right? It takes them years and years to get hundreds of diamonds together, and the necklace ends up being worth 2 million livres, right? Which today is worth over $18.5 million. This necklace is worth, you know, half a small country. It's obscenely expensive, and it's all because this guy is just keen to, you know, to get to know this Madame Du Barry a bit better. The problem here is that the bastard goes and bloody dies of smallpox before it's even finished. While it's being made in 1774, Louis XV, he dies. Now, his successor, you may already know this, is Louis XVI, obviously, but he's the king when the French Revolution takes place. So he and his wife, Marie Antoinette, are not the most popular rulers, and they end up getting rather aggressive haircuts with a guillotine in 1793 during the Jacobins' Reign of Terror. But anyway, back in 1778, when the necklace is finally finished, Louis XVI, he doesn't want it. He doesn't want anything to come anywhere near it. He's already known for excess, and he's already unpopular for mismanaging the finances of the country. And as a result, he's just not going anywhere near it. The other theory is perhaps that Marie Antoinette doesn't want it because she's a stuck-up piece of work who won't wear someone else's jewellery, or because it's a huge waste of money and she knows it. In any case, Marie Antoinette and Louis XVI, they're not interested in this necklace. So this, you can understand their reasoning here. First of all, the Kingdom of France is just financially ruined because they've been bankrolling the American Revolution is the principal reason for this. So there's no, the financial situation is just beyond repair at this point. Marie Antoinette, as I said, already seen as, as this woman who sort of pisses away money on stupid rubbish and perhaps they didn't want to make her reputation worse. And the unpopularity of the French royal family, it means they're not really something they're looking to add fuel to the fire to, by buying a 2 million livre necklace here. So now we got on to the main character of the story. The stage is set. There's this expensive necklace kicking around that the French royal family are interested in. And this is where our hero comes in. Her name is Jeanne de Valois-Saint-Remy. And if I've said that wrong, well, I'm not surprised. She's born in 1756 as the child of an impoverished noble, Jacques de Valois-Saint-Remy, and a servant girl that he rather liked the look of. Now, this bloke, Jacques, he's a bit of a drunkard and just a bit of a rubbish bloke, to be honest. He neglects his three surviving kids. He had six of them all together, and they all end up as beggars, unfortunately. These kids are eventually scooped up by another noble family and given a pension by the royal family, so they're looked after in that way. And as a result of this, Jeanne goes to a boarding school. And then in 1780, at the age of 24, she marries a bloke named Marc-Antoine Nicolas de Lamotte, right? It's obviously a bit of a shotgun wedding because she immediately has twins a month after they're married. But the twins, unfortunately, don't survive infancy because the 18th century was pretty rubbish when it came to, you know, keeping babies alive. So that's a bit of a tragedy early on in Jeanne's life there. Jeanne ends up with a bit of a taste for the finer things in life, however, after living amongst the nobility in Versailles. Now, before Jeanne has settled down with this bloke and had these kids, she was, you know, living it up with the nobility in Versailles, and she got a bit of a taste for the finer things in life. Now, because her husband isn't chucking around the cash like she wants him to, she starts to fiddle around with other blokes, and she takes up with this bloke whose name is Retou de Villette, and he is her husband's mate and also, absurdly, a gigolo as well. So, you know, just a jack of all trades, apparently. Anyway, after getting sick of him in 1783, she starts to get involved with another bloke whose name is Cardinal Prince Louis de Rohan. Really don't feel like I'm doing these French names very well, but whatever. Anyway, let's just go with Rohan. Rohan is desperately trying to get in Marie Antoinette's good books because he wants to be a minister for Louis the 16th. Now, this wasn't happening because he'd already said a couple of rather inopportune things about her mum, and Marie Antoinette wasn't about to forget it. So our mate Jeanne, right, she sniffs an opportunity to give this guy the short end of the stick and make a bit of cash, and this is where the necklace comes back into it, because obviously Rohan, desperate to curry favour with Marie Antoinette, and Jeanne sees a way to exploit that for her gain. So the con is on. Jeanne knows that Berma and Bassange are desperate to sell this necklace because they've invested a fortune in it and they are stone cold broke. So she's armed with that information. And she talks to the previous bloke that she'd been with. You remember his name was Retou de Villette, who happens to be handy with a pen and can forge letters like nobody's business. She also goes to her husband Nicholas, who she's still married to. And despite their marriage being, you know, absolutely in the toilet, he's still up to make some cash. So she's got these three blokes on the go here. And they're all, well, sorry, the two blokes are going to help to sort of exploit and you know, pull one over this third bloke, Rohan. So Jeanne goes to Rohan and says, listen here, mate, I can get you in really good with the Queen. We're good mates. We're thick as thieves. We are. Don't even worry about it. And Rohan, he can't believe his luck. He's going, oh, bloody hell, really? That's fantastic. And Jeanne goes, mate, listen, I can deliver you a letter or whatever you want to Marie Antoinette, who, let's remember, she has absolutely nothing to do with. She doesn't even know the Queen at this stage, or, you know, definitely not on, you know, not mates with her at any stage. And Rohan, on the other hand, he falls for a hook, line, and sinker. He's like, absolutely, yep, writes out these letters, take them off to the Queen, no worries at all. So Jeanne takes these letters and starts to, you know, well, supposedly delivered them to the Queen, but what she does instead is take them to Retou, who you remember is a master forger. He's very good with it, very handy with a pen, and he starts forging these letters from Marie Antoinette. So Rohan thinks he's corresponding with the Queen when in fact Retou is the one writing all of these letters. Now, Retou, he does make one small mistake when writing these letters. He signs them Marie Antoinette de France. Not how you're going to say it in French. I've given that ship, I think, has well and truly sailed. When in fact French royals, they didn't use any honorifics or they just signed it their first name. That was it. They didn't use last names or anything else like that. Just their first name, and that was that. Anyway, that doesn't matter for now. After a bit of back and forth, the Queen, quote unquote, the Queen, suggests a secret nighttime meeting in the gardens in Versailles. Now, Rohan, he can't believe his luck. He is keen as mustard and so puts on his glad rags and goes to meet her in this nighttime rendezvous, except obviously it's not the Queen. The Queen doesn't even know anything about this. Marie Antoinette is completely ignorant that this plot is happening. So instead, Jeanne has actually organised for a prostitute whose name is Nicole to meet with Rohan in the gardens here. Now, Rohan, he's a hopeless romantic, and he meets up with Nicole. He gives her a rose and everything like it's the bloody bachelorette. And anyway, she says that she'll forgive him for the remarks that he made in the past and all that sort of stuff. And, you know, they're getting on like a house on fire. Remember, this is not the Queen. This is a prostitute pretending to be the Queen. Rohan, he's stoked. Can't believe it. He's having a great time. It's all going perfectly. And now, this is when Jeanne kicks the grift into top gear. So with Rohan well and truly on the hook here, Jeanne and Retou forge a new letter from Marie Antoinette. This one says, check this out, Rohan, my mate. I'm super keen on this necklace, but my bloody idiot husband won't buy it because he says the country has no money or some rubbish. I don't know. I wasn't listening, but the point is I want this necklace. Rohan reckons that if he gets this necklace for her, then he will be in like Flynn. So on the 21st of January, 1875, Jean gives Rohan this letter asking him to be the secret intermediary between the jewelers and the queen. Now, Rohan obviously 100% on board and agrees to help to sneak the money to the jewelers and all that sort of stuff. And he meets with Burma and Bassange and shows them these forged letters from the queen and snags the necklace from them. They're stoked because they've finally sold this bloody necklace to the queen. They've finally got rid of it and they're going to be paid, obviously. And Rohan, he's as happy as Larry as well. He goes and delivers the necklace to someone who he thinks is the queen's valet. In reality, of course, it's Jean's husband, Nicholas, right? So he's in on the con as well, you remember. And then he buggers off to London and starts flogging the diamonds individually. So it's worth pointing out at this stage, something that's important to keep in mind here. Everyone involved in this is happy. Everyone involved in this right now, they're absolutely stoked about how this is turning out. Because as far as they're all concerned, it's a win-win-win-win-win for everyone, right? Number one, Rohan, he can't believe his luck because he thinks he's going to be the object of the Queen's desire now and you know, get involved in some royal affairs here. And so he's grinning like a shot fox. Burma and Bassange, they've finally offloaded this bloody necklace that this idiot king from years ago had ordered, so they're happy as well. Jeanne and her boyfriend and her husband are all rich as anything and absolutely loving it now that they've got this necklace, they're flogging these diamonds. And I suppose the broader French population probably aren't that stoked about the whole thing because they're starving and having the pants taxed off them, but, you know, that, I guess we can't all be winners. Anyway, it all stuffs up beyond belief, as you'd expect. Of course it does. Because after a while, Rohan realises that the Queen isn't even slightly more interested in him. And on top of that, Burma and Bassange, they start whinging because they still haven't been paid. So eventually, Burma and Bassange, they go to Marie Antoinette and they say, "Listen here, Your Madge, honestly, mate, you're taking the piss. How about that cash for the ice that we hooked you up with? You've had the necklace for ages, and we'd love to see those dollary dues because pay your bill. Time to pay the piper. Well, not the piper, time to pay the jeweller. That doesn't have the same ring to it, but still, give us money." She says, "What are you blokes talking about? I've got no idea about this necklace. I mean, you know, Louis the 15th ordered it, and I haven't heard of it since, so I don't remember inviting you to my barbecue, so why are you all up in my grill?" And Marie Antoinette realises, once they've explained, the jewellers explain what happened with Rohan, and Marie Antoinette realises someone's pulled a fast one here and they've been besmirching her good, well, not her good name, besmirching just her name in order to obviously pull off some kind of a con here. So Marie Antoinette and Louis the 16th, they decide to arrest Rohan, but they can't resist a little bit of theatre in doing this here. So what happens is this. On the 15th of August in 1785, Rohan, he's supposed to be doing the service for the Assumption of Mary. He's a cardinal, which I think I mentioned beforehand, but honestly, who knows? I can't remember myself. Anyway, he's a cardinal. So he's having to deliver this sermon, this service, whatever. I don't know. Anyway, instead of doing the usual bread and the wine and the cheese and whatever it is that Catholics do, I don't really know, he finds himself arrested in front of the court. So, you know, bit of a twist in the tale for him there, not expecting that one. The king asks him just what the bloody hell he thinks he's up to there, you know, stuffing around with a necklace and doing all this other business in the name of the queen. And he says, no, mate, it's all good. Don't even worry about it. Sorry for the mix-up. Here's a letter from your missus. She wants me to buy this necklace for her because, you know, you can't because the peasants are starving or something. I don't know. I wasn't really listening to that part either, but I was doing your queen a favour." And Rohan, he gets out one of the letters that had been sent, these forged letters, and Louis immediately realises that it's a fake because it's signed, as I said, it's signed Marie Antoinette de France, which, again, if you'll remember, is not how she would have done it. So the king is absolutely ropeable. He carts him off to the Bastille, which, of course, you remember, is only about 3 or 4 years away from being stormed during the revolution. But at this stage, Rohan, realising that he is up a certain creek without a certain paddle, he dobbs in Jeanne. So poor old Jeanne gets arrested 3 days later, along with Retaux, and, if you believe it, poor old Nicole as well, the woman who was impersonating the queen. So these four conspirators, along with another bloke, for some reason, had nothing to do with it at all. His name was Alessandro Cagliostro, and he had nothing to do with his plot, but he's just chucked into the dungeon for good measure. Marie Antoinette insists on a public trial to defend her reputation. Now, hilariously enough, it has the exact opposite effect. Because Rohan, he hasn't done anything wrong except for being, you know, a bit of a bloody silly galah, he's acquitted by the court straight away, as are Nicole and, fortunately, Cagliostro, because, again, he had nothing to do with it, and, you know, so he gets off scot-free, luckily. Now, Rohan, he still gets exiled. I guess that's his punishment. And Rateau also gets exiled, as he was found guilty of forgery. Cagliostro was also exiled, but that was because the king thought he was a sorcerer. That is not a joke. So the three of them get off essentially scot-free, although they have to leave France, which is, in the scale of punishments, not really that much worse than a slap on the wrist. Being forced to leave France? Oh, no, please don't make me leave France. Oh, no, that's awful. Anyway, Jeanne is also found guilty. She's obviously the mastermind behind this whole plot, so she's facing a much more, facing a much harsher punishment. But the thing is, even though she's found guilty, public opinion held that Marie Antoinette was actually the guilty party here and that she was scapegoating onto these other poor bastards who had been arrested. So when Jeanne is sentenced to being whipped, branded and chucked in a prison, the public took her side and the massively unpopular queen went down like a fart in an elevator. No one wanted to take her side at all. So Jeanne, she manages to escape from prison by dressing herself up like a boy and then flees to London. And it's there that she writes a book, and I'm going to have a red hot go at this one. It is called The Memoirs Justificatifs de la Comtesse de Valois de la Motte. Absolutely crushed that one. Absolutely bloody crushed that one. In which she tried to defend what she'd done. Now, she lived there until 1791, when she died, after falling out of a hotel window. Again, can't make this up. Well, you could, but didn't have to. That is just how it went. Theories, there are a lot of actually, you know, the whole falling out of a window thing, there are quite a few theories about it, which include her being murdered by French royalists or hiding from someone that she owed money to. In any case, if that's the truth, then it seems a leopard never really changed its spots. But the most important part of all of this, you know, this is obviously an interesting and funny story about a necklace and about a con and all that sort of stuff. But there is an important, there's a level of historical weight to this story as well, because the affair of the diamond necklace, as it went on to be known, is that Marie Antoinette's reputation never recovered from this scandal. And she was obviously more or less hated by everyone already. You know, this thing only made it worse, and she was never able to turn it back around after this. So this enormous unpopularity of the French royal family, it helped obviously to spur on the French Revolution, which of course kicked off only a few years later and ended up being one of the most important, if not the most important, historical event in the last couple of centuries. But of course, that's another story. But that's it. That's all she wrote today, sports fans. That is the affair of the diamond necklace. The con is on, or it was on at least, until, you know, poor old Jeanne fell out of a window. That's that for this week. Of course, just your general weekly reminder that Half-Assed History is your place for everything you need to know about the show. It's there you can find links to our email address, the Twitter account, of course, and the Patreon if you want to chuck me a buck or two for all of these episodes. I've still got stickers to give away. Send me an email, halfassedhistory@gmail.com. Include your address and I'll send out those stickers free of charge. No worries at all. Closing out the show this week, as we do every week, with a question posed on Reddit. This week, Reddit historian Skekekt has something for us to think about. In the entire, we've talked about a lot of jewelry this week, obviously talked about necklaces, what have you. And so in the entire history of espionage, they're always talking about spy rings, always talking about rings, that sort of stuff. But we never hear anything about spy necklaces or other types of spy jewelry. Yeah, no, that one really, that was a bit of a stinker. Didn't really come together this week.